You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK. Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and on today's show, we're going to continue to look at the 2024 elections, the presidential race. But my focus here is more perhaps at the grassroots level on what's going on in our country and the partisan divide, how this is playing out in our country and between us as people. To do that, I've got a national political reporter here who I respect and is a friend, and I had a chance to meet, I think it was 7 years ago. He's not your typical reporter, and that he doesn't just come in and helicopter in, so to speak, write a story and then leave. He stays in touch with people, and that's why after 7 years, we still stay in touch. And he's a very interesting and articulate and thoughtful person. His name's Michael Cruz. He's a reporter with Politico. Michael, thank you for taking the time.
Robin, thank you for the intro. Always good to be with you on your show and to visit with you when we have the chance.
Yeah. There's been a lot written, a lot said about this election. There were some surprises, but I guess I want to go back, I guess, to the grassroots again, because you are somebody that goes out and writes a lot about people at the ground level and how the world is impacting them and their views of the world. And I want to, I guess, start with an article that you wrote recently about a family that's been torn apart by politics, and there's a local angle because they're from southern Illinois. But I guess first, how did you come up with this idea for the story, and how did it kind of lead into this? It's a very lengthy but interesting and sad article all at once, but it's very important to kind of understand what's going on in our country.
Sure. The story is about a family, the Johnsons, from Centralia, Illinois. First and foremost, a story about two brothers, Ted and Fred. And in the context of the current political divide, Ted is the Trump voter, and Fred is the Kamala Harris voter. Originally was going to vote for Joe Biden, but the blue brother, as opposed to the red brother, so to speak. The story, which ran at this point a couple weeks back, Friday right before the election, as you mentioned, pretty long story. One of the longer stories I've done in now 10 years at Politico, but it developed over the course of a year plus, really quite organically. I initially met Ted because I was in New Hampshire at a Nikki Haley town hall in September of 2023, and he stood up and asked a really interesting question. I thought, standing on the side of the room, he gets up and introduces himself as a veteran, as a registered independent, and he asks Nikki Haley, how can we come back together, and can you help us do that? How can we come back together as a country? I followed up with Ted, and one of the things he said to me in the course of our first conversation was, part of the reason I asked that question is I no longer talk to my brother. Politics and Trump has gotten in between us. And that led to a call with Fred, with his brother, which also was very interesting. And what developed over the course of time was the sense that while this division had settled into kind of, in some ways, familiar political corners, the rift between them went much, much deeper than that. The rift was a function of family history, of a certain amount of family trauma, and beyond just family trauma, community trauma, the notion that Centralia, like so many places in places like Southern Illinois, so many places in so many areas of the country, is not what it used to be. Its better days were 30, 40, 50 longer than that years ago. And so what developed in the course of my staying in touch with both Ted and Fred separately, because they do not and still do not talk to each other, but both of them talk to me, what developed in the course of those conversations was the sense that I could tell a story about, yes, our political divide and how it's tearing apart families. And like that alone, I think speaks to a lot of people, unfortunately, now. But more than that, speaks to the way that our political divide is really a function of much, much bigger forces that go, you know, many generations back. So this story allowed me to tell not only a story about a family riven by politics, but a story about, you know, the real reasons I think we have settled into, unfortunately, this level of kind of two Americas.
That's interesting to hear that, because I think it does play to directly to, I think, how people view the world right now, and the sense of nostalgia that people have, that you know, going back, and I will say, to some degree, there's feeling in both parties, to a degree, the talk of bringing manufacturing back brings recollections of the 50s and 60s when manufacturing was in its heyday. And economically, can we bring that back where people are making things? It's also a little dangerous to go back and get too nostalgic, because those were difficult times in our country's history for African Americans, for women. There were still, you know, environmentally. And again, I'm not getting cultural politics in here. I'm just saying it was a different era. But it seems like it can be, you know, on the one hand, yeah, we'd love to have that back. But on the other hand, you don't want all of it back, I guess. Is that?
Absolutely. It's obviously, to say the least, a really, really complicated thing. But what I don't think is complicated is the reality that a lot of people feel some version of this. And for Ted and Fred, they agree. They both sort of miss what Centralia used to be in their boyhoods. There is an ache for what was. They obviously have responded differently to that ache, as have so many, but that exists, and it exists viscerally in Centralia. I think Centralia, Illinois, is this incredible microcosm of this facet of what's going on in the country right now. It is a place that exists because of literally the Illinois Central Railroad. It was this very important hub from the very get-go, going back to the 1850s, of this incredibly important railroad. It was, in some sense, the middle of the middle of America, right? And active coal mining scene. There was an oil boom that started in the late 30s. And all of those things, these three pillars of not just Centralia's vibrancy, but of, you know, American power and might in the last 175 years, are now no longer there, hardly at all, to the level they once were. And so obviously that is going to make people feel something they almost can't even describe. And how does that pain manifest itself? And certainly it's not just a question of, you know, political choice making, but I do think that pain that people feel, that ache that people feel, settles into this political divide, into these ruts, into these kind of rigid corners that we've backed ourselves into.
You think in your conversations and telling this story, do you think people that vote this way when in this, whether it's Trump saying we're going to bring back coal, we're going to bring back manufacturing, and to try to address this sense of loss and nostalgia, do you think they really believe that? that, and I'm not being condescending. I'm just trying to get inside their minds. Do they really believe he will do that, or is it just a matter of him, somebody listening to them, and that's it?
First and foremost, it's somebody listening to them, seeing them, quote unquote, voicing what they feel and have felt for a long time. I mean, that's been a central part of the appeal of Donald Trump from the absolute get-go of his political ascent, right? Like Ted articulated this quite well pretty early on in our relationship, that he wanted, and Ted is not wanting. Ted is sufficiently comfortable financially, is a retired Army lieutenant colonel, has a job, lives in New Hampshire, but he described to me a desire that he has and still has for Trump to get reelected at that time when we were having that conversation and wreck stuff, basically wreck the country to then be able to rebuild it. Like there is a sort of level of inchoate anger that leads Ted and the Teds, the many Teds out there, to kind of want that. It's not just simple, let's blow it all up. There is always an addendum so we can build it back in a certain way, right? DBD on whether that works that way or can work that way at all. Whereas, you know, Fred and the Freds out there don't think that things need to be exploded, detonated. You know, things need to be changed. Problems need to be solved, no question, in Centralia's and elsewhere. But destruction is not the answer. I think we're about to see some version of what Ted was talking about going on a year ago to me. This desire for a certain amount of wrecking ballness. I mean, Ted texted me just the other evening in the wake of some of the cabinet nominations we've seen, and basically said as much. This is what I was talking about. This is what I want. Kind of a big middle finger to the establishment and to the way things have been, or you know, should be, according to the elites in the minds of the Teds.
Interesting. You mentioned this anger, and I sense it too. Just an underlying anger. And I've had discussions with people, and I mean, on a couple of occasions, it was anger about COVID, the reaction to COVID. But that kind of came after Trump to a degree. But and I think sometimes people, of course, I hear this from my friends on the left, that it's anger at immigrants, it's anger at change. They're looking for somebody to blame for their plight in life because of what we originated our discussion on. When these towns lose their major employer, they lose their economic reason for being. Is it, I mean, we've talked about this before in our interviews and off air and all. Is it economic? Is it cultural? Whatever is driving this anger? And the sense that make America great again, taking back our country, all this. In your discussions, what do you ever get deeper with these folks on what exactly all that means? And
look, this is an all of the above kind of thing, and we've talked about this at times. Counties and a dwindling number of counties in the country that voted for Obama twice, voted for Trump in 2016, voted for Trump in 2020, and now some of those counties, some of those 25 counties that did that in those four elections went back to Trump. Now, what is going on in that handful of counties? You know, people who think about politics in kind of a more intellectual way, a more political science-based way, wonder what could possibly make a county do that in that handful of elections. Well, to me, and there's of course a risk of painting with far too broad a brush here, but to me, it is a byproduct of this building, this compounding anger over time. Those counties are voting for change. Like that is the one constant. Every 4 years in the last five presidential elections, they voted for change. Why are they voting for change? They're voting for change because there is a feeling that things aren't working. Things are getting worse. Things are getting harder here for me. And they're not wrong. Of course, there are some exceptions. Again, painting, so we're generalizing to the point of overgeneralizing here. But there are lots of places and lots of people who feel like things have been getting worse and harder for them for, at this point, generations. It is not a COVID thing. It is not a Great Recession thing. It is an arc that I'm 40. I just turned 47 years old. It is an arc that basically is my life. The early to mid to late 70s on, these places have wanted change because things are getting worse. So when I talk to people in places like this, quote unquote, regular people, in other words, not elected officials or would-be elected officials or political professionals, whatever they say to me, whatever explanations or justifications I hear, I try to hear them in that context with that as a baseline understanding. That helps, for me, fuel like a requisite amount of curiosity and empathy. I'm always thinking on some level when I'm talking to anybody about anything, how did you get to this place where you think this? There's always an array of, you know, interlocking, interconnected, sometimes contradictory reasons, but there are always reasons. Somebody thinks the way they think, somebody does what they do for a whole host of reasons. And it's on me as a reporter, shoot, as a human being who needs to and wants to have conversations with anybody potentially, to always keep that kind of long term context in mind.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Michael Cruz, friend and reporter for Politico. We're having a conversation about the election results in terms of, I guess, the grassroots level and our relationships with each other. We've kind of talked a little bit about specifically the story Michael wrote about brothers who are named Johnson, no relation, don't talk to each other. Have had a difficult relationship over politics, over Donald Trump, and kind of the meaning of that for symbolic of our country's divide. I know you've done a lot of reporting in the battleground states, most all the battleground states, with the exception of maybe one or two, but I know you also talk to folks on maybe the other half of the country, the part that's doing well. And it does seem like we're divided 50-50, and you've got the bigger cities, tech jobs, service jobs that are doing well. Do you think they grasp how you just described how the other half is doing and the anger and what they feel? I mean, I'm just curious. Because I'm in a rural area, and I wonder that. Do people really understand that? And I know a lot of stories say there's condescension and put downs, and I get that with some of it. But I still think, is there anything there that's a connection to folks in bigger areas, to wealthier areas, to see that they do grasp what's going on out here? Or,
you know, everybody's different, but I think on the whole there is a certain still amount of incomprehension of how difficult it is for a lot of people in a lot of places, economically, but more than economically, just sort of socioeconomically. I sometimes see myself as a as an intermediary or a translator. I mean, not in some, you know, overt way, but, you know, I can speak coastal elite. I can hopefully go to places that are the opposite of the havens of the coastal elite, and if not fit in, certainly have, you know, honest and open and meaningful conversation. That's certainly been my experience the time I've been covering politics, and even before as a reporter I started covering politics. But leading into the election, I heard the continuation of sentiments I've heard for now going on 10 years. How could anybody possibly vote for Donald Trump? Just an incapacity to understand how anybody, let alone enough people to get him elected, let alone now enough people to give him a margin in the popular vote, could vote for Donald Trump. You know, I had some people, including even in my own family, say, we can't possibly win this time around, right? Given everything that's gone on over the last several years, starting with January 6th. What are you talking about? Of course he could win. Of course he could win. You know, I think there's, I find myself right now, this isn't precisely what you asked, but I'm thinking now how I've been trying to think about how to approach my work in the coming months and years. And one of those ways, I think, is doubling down on this role that reporters don't typically think of playing, sometimes do, but certainly don't consciously think of playing, which is this role as intermediary. There's something kind of clarifying to me about working on the story about the brothers. I kind of uncomfortably became at first an intermediary between them, but I grew more comfortable with it. Like, why are they talking to me, but they can't talk to each other? Well, they're talking to me because they have a lot to say. And they, especially Fred, they want to talk to each other, but can't or aren't right now. So they talk to me. And so to the extent that I can play a role like that with more Teds and Freds, I'm talking to more Teds, I'm talking to more Freds, and maybe downstream from that effort, more Teds end up talking to more Freds without me as the intermediary. And I know that sounds kind of, you know, maybe even a little bit self-indulgent, a little bit idealistic, but I feel the need to try to find a way to do some work that matters. And I think that is one of the ways that journalism, at a time when mainstream media is becoming sort of less and less listened to, less and less influential, maybe this is one of the ways that certain kinds of stories can help alleviate this hardened national 50-50 divide. Because frankly, I find it just untenable. Like, we cannot keep doing this way forever. I believe that wholeheartedly. We just can't. At some point, it's not going to just be a divide. It's going to be a fracture, a break, whether that looks like a conventional civil war, you know, with weaponry, who knows, but it just is untenable. And beyond just untenable in like a 30,000 foot way, it's untenable for us as people, as citizens. It's untenable for me professionally. Untenable for me personally. If I feel hard-hearted and uncurious about every other fellow American I encounter, it just seems like a terrible way to live, let alone an impossible way to do my job.
Yeah, I empathize with you. I'm going to try this. I've only got 2 minutes left. This question doesn't lend itself to a 2-minute answer, but the biggest issue I hear from people on the left is, but Trump tried to overthrow our government on January 6th. Don't these people that are voting for him realize that they're risking our democracy? And in 2 minutes or a minute and a half, what's their response to that? I mean, you referenced earlier the guy saying, you know, blow it up and all. they're confident they can do that and still keep our democracy, obviously, and in say a minute and a half, if you can address that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, obviously, it's not a first order concern of those folks. It's not something they think about. It's not even something they really agree with. Like they would argue and have argued with the premise of the question, starting with the word democracy. We're not a democracy. We're a republic, et cetera, et cetera. Right. But I think this does speak to, for me, it speaks to the increasingly different information spaces in which we live. Just almost utterly different realities. We are having two separate conversations. Half the country, again, just generally speaking, half the country thinks one thing is going on and half the country thinks another is going on. I don't mean to sort of explain this away. I don't know what is going to happen. And I don't want to put words in mouths, this is exactly how all of this sort of person thinks about this. But I don't know how this is going to go. Neither do they, but they do think whatever it is that has been going on for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years cannot continue. So let's try something else. I think that's in some very general way, the response or the sort of response I've heard from the folks you're referring to.
Yeah, we will find out. And I certainly look forward to continuing to following your work on this. For our listeners, again, Michael Kruse, KRUSE with Politico. He's done some outstanding work over the years on reporting on what's going on. I know he's spent a lot of time in our region of the country. I think he understands what's going on out here, and he's done an excellent job of reporting it, not just on a national political level, but on a human level, which I think has been, well, it's been the topic of our discussion today. And Michael, I really appreciate you taking the time and your insights. And I look forward to talking with you again on this at some point, and we'll see what happens.
We will. Always great to chat.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.